the meeting. We're running a little bit late. We're trying to approve. The first item, the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the May 2nd meeting.
Move approval.
Second. We have a motion in the second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Next item on the agenda is public comment. If you are here to speak, please come to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds. No one's here for public comment?
Wow.
No, she not looking as well.
My name is Mike McCall. I'm here on behalf of Saucy Burbank, conceptual site plan for 1110 Chuck Dolly. Just wanted to, we're looking to rezone to R2 for the site. Just add two additional lots currently zoned to R1. We're not trying to add additional density, just two additional lots. I have a conceptual site plan here for you guys. Trying to keep as much canopy and tree cover as possible for this new pocket neighborhood. Would you guys like to see this document?
Yeah. Thank you.
I think that is one.
It's behind the Stone Institute.
FNG. Thank you.
Hey, I'm still doing the work. The property that you're looking at is about 2.79 acres. And before I tell you a little bit more about the history of the property, I've got some things pulled up and we picked up four. But it shows where the property is.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that may force you to see. And it shows some of the neighborhood, some of the neighborhoods nearby and how they've been developed. That 2.79 acres is the last of 30 acres that my family had at the farm. It's pretty difficult to get rid of that last little piece. But we did put a lot of thought in how we wanted it developed. As I said, my grandparents had a farm there. My father decided to build our home there. And I'll give you a picture of that. Oops. Where it's situated, if you're familiar with Shinwood 2, Shinwood 2 wraps around it like a little horseshoe. When I was growing up, Shinwood 2 was not there. I rode my pony all the way back to Shin Creek. It was a very beautiful childhood. It was like a little miniature farm. It was a working farm at one time. I asked the realtor, I said, please, I want something that's nice for the community. If it may be something for children, the McDonald House had to work. Then we tried for something along the lines of a nursing home. That didn't work. Saucy Burbank has been the first buyer that's willing to keep a lot of the old azaleas, a lot of the old trees. And the lots are still, will be much larger than the Shinwood 2 lots.
You have that, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Like I said, in comparison to the other things, like the old board property, these lots would be much larger. Thank you.
Good afternoon, I'm Michelle Beck. I reside at 7160 Instagram Boulevard. I'm a short-term rental owner and I'm here to talk about the ordinance draft that's on the agenda. It was suggested during the planning commission meeting that if current short-term rental owners renew from November 1st to December 31st and any new permit holders apply, January 1st to the end of January. This is to take care of the cap, the 100 cap that has been surpassed now. The only request, from my understanding, from planning committee, you all, was to tighten the wording on the cap. So any other changes proposed to the ordinance, I don't believe were requested, and I don't believe they should be heavily considered either. I have several issues with the way the changes have been made. This ordinance is still in its early phases, and even members of the planning commission state that it should be given more ample time to evaluate its effectiveness as it's currently written. To be more specific about some of the changes being made on this draft, I'm not in favor of the fact that not enough time for the non-conforming short-term rental owners who are grandfathered in to submit the renewal documents, as I stated, extend the deadline time for us, started earlier. It's not just a matter of writing a check to get the permit for us. There are several documents we have to pull together, so doing just a two-week period in December is not ideal. I also don't think we should contact the town each time we leave the area in order to give them an emergency contact. Let us fill that in on the renewal application at the beginning. I think that everyone agreed that would that make more sense anyways when they discussed it. And I also don't think there should be a minimum rental max for any short-term rental owner. Some folks are preparing their homes. They got the permit for the reason that they own a home. They have the intention of setting it up to be a short-term rental. They're not renting it yet because they're preparing, and then to take that away from them is not fair. Also, economic reasons come into play sometimes. Think about that. We may not make the minimum number of nights because of something that happens economically. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
My name is Laurie Vixler. I reside at 144 Third Avenue. I'm a short-term rental owner, and I rent 144 Third Avenue, as well as another full house. I start my time, and I say the same thing every time for 10 years. I'm very sad to be standing here again. There has never been so much time spent on one ordinance in the town of Mount Pleasant, and so much energy put in to treat us STR owners differently than every other business in town. When I was here, I think it was 2 months ago, and listened carefully, I believe you gave a directive to the planning department to please clarify the language to enforce the cap of short-term rentals at 400, so that, and that was in, that cap was implemented so that we don't disturb our neighborhoods and we maintain the integrity of our town and neighborhoods. And somehow there were 437 permits issued to date, with at least 81 homes currently on a wait list intending to get permits the next year. So I believe the intent of sending it to the Planning Commission was for the language of that particular clause to be clarified so that there was a system in place to cap at 400 and also to monitor your waitlist or lottery to allow for other permits when there are 400 and new permits come available. So I'm not sure why all the other language was put in and a new draft was created. I ask that everything else in the draft be discarded at this point instead of creating a new ordinance to focus on a cap of 400, which is the original intention of the ordinance, and then to see how things go for a few years instead of redoing the wheel again. We've had very few problems, minuscule, which I know the planning department will tell you that. And I appreciate all the work you've done over the years. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who has a comment?
Kim Williams, 1132 Whitehall Drive. I am here to talk about the ADU portion of the SDR ordinance that only allows three people to occupy an ADU. Out of the 437 permits, only 45 are ADUs. And out of those 45, only four have more than one bedroom. So there's only about four ADUs that have two bedrooms, which I have two bedrooms. So the average person or family that comes to my Airbnb is usually mom and dad and two kids. So with having two bedrooms, that allows us to sleep four to five people, which is usually families that come to visit. So having the occupancy is only three, that excludes a large portion of who comes to stay. So I am asking that that occupancy cap of three for an ADU has the same stipulations as the regular SDR, which is two people per bedroom and two additional. My guest house is a full house. It has two bedrooms, a full kitchen, full bath, laundry. It's a home. So it definitely can hold four people or more. But having the cap of three on a two-bedroom home is kind of, well, it's not kind of, it's very counterproductive. And it doesn't help my business at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Ricosi. I live at 136 Heritage Circle. I was here last month, I think it was May 18th, when this issue first came up, and there was a discussion to tighten the cap. Michelle Reed said she would put that into motion. And then a couple of weeks ago, we went before the commission, and not only was the verbiage on the cap changed, but the entire ordinance had been tweaked from top to bottom. We sat there in this room for a good hour or so going back and forth about all of these red line issues, and I think it created a huge confusion, so much so that they deferred it back to you. So here we are back at the beginning. And I think one of the main things that we got from this is the short-term rental owners, as well as the commission, agreed that yes, we need to come up with a system like November 1st to December 31st for those of us that are already permitted, and then January 1st comes along, and if there's any permits left over in the 400, those could then be issued. And I was pretty hopeful that that was a very good suggestion. They also seem to feel, just like us, those of us in the audience, that we're in the infancy stages of this ordinance. We spent 2.5 years. I spent 2.5 years of my life with the previous planning committee coming up with an ordinance that seems to be working very well. So I'm not sure why, when the only thing that you guys asked was tighten the cap, get us back to 400, we ended up with something that was so confusing that now here we are back here at the beginning, and where do we go from here? So I'm asking that we look to the suggestions that were made during Planning Commission and tighten the cap the way they explained with the date changes, and leave it at that. You know? Let's see how it progresses. Let's give it some time to see if it works for all of us. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, you all. Just Robinette, the 3650 Robinette Terrace on the boat. Want to talk about item E on the agenda. I want to go over a few highlights on it. It is intended to be 20 single family residences. It was zoned, it was annexed in the late 2000s, I believe. And one of the notes from the original meeting is that it was understood by the town that was coming in as non-conforming, and it would be allowed as an existing use and exemption until the time when it was right to be rezoned. The lot sizes are similar to the surrounding existing lots of single family. Right now, there are
believe, 36 trailers with about 36 different families living in there. In numbers will be 20, which is less traffic. Also, the trailers in there now are currently on septic system. Once this annexed in and developed, it'll all be going to Mount Pleasant Water Works for sewer. And then thirdly, the system data is currently no stormwater, implements in place, and part of the development process still have to be stormwater minimums for the town. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for the comment?
Good afternoon. My name is David Vernon, 2108 St. James Drive, Jamestown. I'm here to speak about the short-term rental ordinance that's being reviewed. I think a lot of people have made severe comments on that. One thing that I just think is pertinent is you guys made a recommendation of 120 days to show proof of people using the permit to try to alleviate some of the people that clearly are just holding on to these permits, just a lot of doing it, not even renting space. And I noticed in the last meeting, somehow we very quickly went from 120 to 1. And I'd like for you guys just to kind of reconsider that number. I think it's going to be really easy for people who are doing just that, holding these permits, have no intent of things they're going to use them, have been holding them for potentially years at this point, to very easily show proof of 1 day rented. I mean, that's not difficult to do, right? So I just think that a number between 120 and 1 should be considered, maybe 72. I understand a lot of people are concerned about the 120 number because they are, it's a primary residence, they rent it for the weekends and stuff, and they don't want to rent it for more than 72 days a year because then that is a number that requires them to be potentially be reclassified as far as tax are concerned. I mean, the 6% versus 4% tax ratio. So I think that, we should find some common ground between 1 and 120. Sure, 120 may have been too much, but 1 is not gonna do what's intended, which is keeping those people who are not renting their property from just holding these permits. I think this is really important for the ordinance because if ultimately we don't come up with ordinances that is clear and one, clear, and two, gives newcomers the opportunity at some point to get permitted, then they're going to have an issue like many other townships and cities across the country do, where we have this rampant people that are just not permitted, and it's going to cause, in my opinion, a large number of people that are going to be doing illegally, which, reduces the amount of taxes that the town is taking, and is going to ultimately. It's going to ultimately cost a lot more issues with enforcement, right?
Thank you. Yeah. Is there anyone else with a comment? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Item number 4, which is employee years of service recognition.
Good afternoon, Liz. I have the distinct pleasure of honoring and recognizing Liz Boyles today for 15 years of outstanding service. Liz is a Division Chief of Office of Neighborhood Livability. It's a new division in the Department of Planning, Land Use, and Neighborhoods. This division was created as part of the restructuring about a year and a half ago. Liz is a native of Mount Pleasant. She was here for 10 years. She left around 2004 to go and raise a family. She raised two very successful young men. She returned 5 years ago as principal planner to lead the new comp plan effort. This was not new to her, however, as she has led the efforts on the town's previous comprehensive plans. She is the town's long-range planner. Liz is a planner at heart. While I can say she has expertise in many areas, her true passion is connecting with people and advocating for community. Not only did she shepherd the most recent comp plan process, She facilitated our settlement community task force during a year-long process, which is still ongoing, and she continues to work with our settlement communities. Through her compassionate gesture, gentle guidance, and thoughtful consideration, Liz truly has a gift for communicating effectively and bringing people from all backgrounds together. In between managing projects, supervising planning staff, and overseeing the STR program, code enforcement, green initiatives, including Take Root Mount Pleasant, which to date has given away almost 3,000 trees, helping to make her hometown more beautiful, she has continued to define a mission for, create a work plan for, and grow this new livability division. This is no easy task. If you ask anybody, what is livability to you, you're going to get 40 different answers, like herding cats, and Liz is the perfect person to oversee this. Her next endeavor will be leading our effort to take a deeper dive into our districts established by our comprehensive plan to conduct community meetings, where Liz will no doubt be right at home. Liz is a valued professional, colleague, friend, and sounding board for myself and for others. She is truly an asset to our department and to the town. And you can see she's got a huge cheering group over here from our department. So please join me in recognizing Liz for 15 years of service to the town of Mount Pleasant. It is recommended on our comprehensive plan here for settlement community land uses. So it will come in automatically annexed to CC community conservation. It is improved with single family residents, and it does conform to the CC standards.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Moving on to item B, Ida Road.
Yes, ma'am. I did receive a request this morning to ask that this annexation be withdrawn. It would have come in automatically under the zoning. What they would like to do is come through the Planning Commission process and request another zoning. And so they have asked that this be withdrawn.
Do we need a motion on that?
Probably so.
Okay. Moving on to item number 6A.
Here we have, and this is not new to you, we've been seeing over the past few months the Mount Pleasant Waterworks pump stations. This proposal is for six existing pump stations. They are all currently in different plan developments, and MPW would like to rezone them to public institutional one. Just a quick reminder, this is not to intensify any uses, but as part of their work plan and their public improvements, they are kind of trying to bring in anywhere from 6 to 10 at a time so that they can get them rezoned to the public institutional and then make necessary improvements. And all those improvements are just to improve the site, but they will be required to come into compliance with our requirements. So they will have to do more landscaping, fencing.
Move to approve, Madam Chair.
Second. Move motion and second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion carried. Moving on to item 6B, rezoning.
Okay. This is 110 Pitt Street. This is a 0.13-acre parcel. It's currently zoned neighborhood commercial. And the request before you is to zone it to R4, medium density residential district. It's located here on Pitt Street. Near Benning and across from the commercial properties along that street. You can see here that the future land use does recommend commercial uses for this property. However, there's been a residence there since the late 1800s. It's always been used for residential purposes.
And it came to us by way of the Historic District Preservation Commission. The owners wanted to make some improvements, particularly so that they could age in place. They wanted to put an elevator in, do a few things. And because it's zoned neighborhood commercial, they were unable to complete those improvements. And so what they would like to do is rezone it to R4 so that they can make it a conforming residential use. There is no chance of this lot being subdivided. It's a very small lot. The R4 would allow it to be conforming to the residential development standards in R4. And as you can see here, it's this white house. And there you can get kind of a view of it. But what they want to do is just make some improvements to the house that they lived in for many years. And the R4 zoning is the most appropriate designation to go residential. And the Planning Commission did recommend approval unanimously.
I have a question. Is the reason for R4 as opposed to R1 simply the setbacks?
It's the lot size and the setbacks, yes, ma'am.
Okay. And there was zero chance this property could be subdivided or turned into a neighborhood.
It could not be subdivided. In fact, we had a pretty good group come out of the Planning Commission public hearing. They were in favor of this rezoning because I know you're aware of some of the parking issues in this area for commercial uses, and they would rather see it stay a residence than be converted to commercial, which it could be. And they could provide perhaps off-site parking if it was to convert to a commercial use. So it definitely had support of the commission and the public for going residential.
Motion. Second. We have a second. Any discussion?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
You said you couldn't put an elevator here if they didn't get changed to R4?
They wanted to make a few changes, and our ordinance would not allow them to make the necessary improvements under the commercial zoning. It would exceed a certain amount, and so it just made more sense to make it residential zoning so that their house was conforming and their use was legal and they could move forward.
What about the garage? You can't have a garage in neighborhood commercial? Isn't that one of the ones you said?
Yeah, they wanted to do an installation of the elevator and a one-car garage with rear steps. Because it's zoned commercial, making improvements to a non-conforming use would not be permitted.
It's zoned commercial.
It's zoned commercial and it's a residence. It's used as a residence.
Yeah, and I think it should be.
Yeah.
All I'm trying to do is get my arms around the fact that this has been there for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And as a neighborhood commercial zone, they couldn't put a parking garage or an elevator.
Because the improvement serves to a residence, not a commercial use.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carried. Moving on to item rezoning.
Okay, this is a request to rezone two adjoining parcels. Together, they're about 0.64 acres in aggregate from limited office to neighborhood commercial. These properties are right off of Long Point Road between Egypt and Span Street. So you can see here on the future land use map. They are recommended for neighborhood scale commercial. These properties were, just give a little brief history. In 2016, they were annexed into the town. They were given a zoning of LO, limited office, which was appropriate for this area. It's a transitional area. In 2017, a request came to the Planning Commission and Town Council. They wanted to rezone it to area-wide business. That request was denied. So the current request is to go to from LO to NC, neighborhood commercial. And just to kind of give you an idea, this is just our scale of non-residential use districts. So right now, in the limited office, you have a maximum of 3,000 square foot. That's your maximum building size. If you go up to office professional, there is no square footage maximum, but your uses, or you add on a few more uses.
all this daycare, vet clinic, things like that. When you go to neighborhood commercial, there is a maximum of 6,000 square foot of a structure. But that adds on other uses such as an assisted living facility, church, restaurant, outdoor dining. And then, of course, you go up to area-wide business and area-wide business too, which is our most high-intense commercial use. The comp plan does call for neighborhood scale commercial, so both limited office and neighborhood scale commercial are appropriate in that designation. It really talks about small scale commercial uses. They should be designed to serve the neighborhood. And again, the NC zoning would allow these other uses, like medical office, neighborhood gathering place, those sorts of things. And how this came about, the limited office is just that, it's very limited. And we had somebody come in and want to do a like a counseling services, and they could not do that under the current LO. And so they wanted to go, not from OP, but they wanted to go to NC, neighborhood commercial. The Planning Commission did recommend denial. There was the public hearing brought out some folks that weren't in agreement. They felt like the LO, it's been residential since 1800s. And there is two residences on the property. And so the neighborhood really just was not in favor of this rezoning. Just kind of a side note, even though under the NC zoning you could get a maximum of 6,000 square feet, this property has some pretty strict encumbrances. You have a 50-foot buffer along Long Point Road, and then you have your adjacent buffers along adjacent to residential. So by the time you got a structure on there for parking and everything, you probably can only get about a 4,000, 4,500 square foot business there. And that's all I have. I have any questions?
Thank you. Can we have any questions? Is that it? I guess the height there is what, 36?
35.
35.
Yes, ma'am. 40 and a plus.
Could you go back to the original picture?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Let's see. The aerial?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
What I'm looking at is looking for the office space that's there with a parking lot.
Is it next door?
Which is, should be next door.
Yes.
But I'm not
yeah.
seeing it.
Yeah, it's adjacent. Yeah.
Right.
So it's all PD, but there is some office next to it, and then you get closer to Egypt Road, you do have some very wide business.
Can you see it? That aerial photo?
I can't really see. Do you have anything?
The aerial photo? Yeah. Is it to the left?
Yeah, it's to
of the
left. There's an office building.
Okay.
Is that off?
No, I'm looking from the addresses that I saw in the field. I'm not seeing what I'm seeing on this area. Anyhow, the property that's adjacent to it, which is office with a parking lot, is that limited office?
It's within a PD, so it's allowed for office in within the planning development. It doesn't have a town sign. So you can see here, all the gray, all the way up to the corner of intersection of Egypt Road is all within.
What I'm looking for is to the right of where you got the pig or coal, which is, I guess, in town.
Correct. That's right. Yes.
That's what I'm
those
looking
are all in the county, yes, sir.
And it was hard to determine the addresses in the field.
Yes.
So what was concerning me is that adjacent to it is limited office, or appears to be limited office. And that proximity, that intersection, I don't know. I don't understand. I'm having a hard time understanding why the request. And what kind of commercial we might get. That's all.
Anyone else have any thoughts or comments?
I have the same concerns. Does anybody know why what were their main concerns? Commission's main concerns?
Yeah, their main concern was the surrounding
community. That's right, okay. Neighbors coming up.
Yeah, and it was sort of a death by a thousand cuts. We've seen this area, you know, transition over the years. And it is our last comp plan called this area transitional. And so the limited office was appropriate if you were going to have a commercial zoning in the transitional. But it is predominantly, of course, behind there, to the rear. It's all, you know, it's town community and it's residential. So they were very vocal about the fact that this has been used for residential purposes ever since they can remember. And to go from limited office now to a more intense commercial district was unsettling.
I'll move to deny.
I have a motion to deny. You have a second?
Yes, please.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. There was public comment at the beginning, sir.
That's what I mentioned to you, sir.
I didn't understand how this was going. I thought once you got to my number, then I commented. When you went to C, I thought it was my turn to call.
I see. I apologize, sir. But that is not the way that the meeting works. Public comments at the beginning of the meeting. I think that this at this point in time, we have a motion on the table, we have a second, and we have not
discussed. I wasn't advised that the rules of the rules of this.
Yes, sir. I mentioned all public comment happened initially. In fact, I invited you to speak right after the woman was speaking at that.
I thought you said they were going to call me.
I mentioned when you were able to speak.
You did.
I did.
Yeah, I did. Can I have my 2 minutes real quick? I'm prepared.
Sure.
Thank you. My name is Jay Satterfield. I live at 454 Commonwealth Road. Been in Mount Pleasant for 27 years. I actually am a realtor and had kind of run across this piece of property for someone that was a client of mine. And I just thought, oh, wow, if they didn't want to buy it, maybe I'll buy it. And the family that had it, you know, several family members live in the area. They actually went through the process of changing the zoning. I bought it directly from the Cleveland Ellis estate through Mrs. Merriweather. She was the trustee. I actually, it had been on the market on and off for nearly 15 years. They couldn't sell it because it was heirs property. And I paid money out of my pocket to help them clear the title and everything and bought it from them. I've been renting it residentially for a few years now. And with the COVID thing that we had where there were moratoriums on evicting people, I had someone in one of the units sit for 8 months and not pay any rent. So I thought about exploring and renting it on a very low impact commercial basis. And I had it released, as you mentioned, just to a two counselor practice, which, you know, post-COVID counseling is a pretty community-needed thing. And just under the current zoning of limited office, they could do a counseling. I have no intentions of building. We were using existing buildings as is to just one of them, as a matter of fact. One of the homes was going to be a small counseling practice, and that's the only intent we had. So it's not like we're going to go in there and tear houses down and build a big office building. We just want to have a small counseling practice. That's it. Any questions for me directly?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ms. Reed, why would there not be, I mean, if there's existing homes on the property, why would they not be allowed to have a counseling practice there?
So we got an inquiry about this, and we do allow for home-based businesses, limited home-based businesses, those sorts of things. So if you live on the premises and you want to have a home-based business while you live on site, there are certain parameters for that. The inquiry we had regarding a counseling office did not meet those parameters. It would be an office. And we struggled with the fact, is this a true medical office?
And we consulted with our transportation department, because sometimes when we struggle with uses, we look at ITE trips, things like that. And the counseling really was not any different than any other type of office. And so it really didn't fall under the, first of all, we weren't told anybody was living there as far as a home basis. So it was brought to us as we want to have offices out of this, on this property. That would be a change in use. And that use that was described to us did not fit under the current LO zoning. So if, that's why this request is before you now. If somebody were living there and wanted to have a home-based business and live on site and work from their home, that is an option. Those are very strict parameters on what you can do out of your home.
I'm sorry, I still don't understand why. So there was someone renting the property and it was a home-based business, then it would be permitted under limited office, but I don't understand why it couldn't be purely office usage with the current buildings.
It can be, but not this type of office use.
Why?
This type of office use is more of a medical office use, and our limited office is more, if you think in terms of a tax office or an accounting office. But when you start looking at the trips that are generated by medical, counseling, veterinary, and those sorts of things, you have a higher trip generation. That kicks it into not being a permitted use in LO. You need more of an office professional use. They could have requested an office professional use. They requested NC, neighborhood commercial.
I requested
But that's, you could have a particular type of office, in limited office. But the office that was proposed to us, the use, does not fall under the LO zoning.
Okay, so you don't have to live there. You can have an office, but it's just limited on the type.
Sure.
Because I would think an accounting office or tax office would generate more trips than a counseling office. It's usually one-on-one and one-hour-long appointment or whatever.
It's the same as counseling, right?
Just, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, the use would be, and with regards to taxes, you could have somebody in there in 15 minutes dropping off their paperwork, so I'm not sure why that would generate more. it would be fewer than a medical office, for sure. Doctor sees somebody 10 or 15 minutes, but,
Yeah, that's my same concern. I think when I picture counseling office, I picture one counselor, one
person,
patient, and you know, just super low key, way more low key than a tax place during. Yeah, I think we're all confused on that. Like, it seems like he should be able to do that under limited.
Well, and that may be something we need to look at with our code rewrite, but the limited office is very limited. And how it was presented to us, it qualifies similar to medical.
Yeah.
And medical just isn't a permitted use. We are looking at consolidating some of these and obviously making some changes to that. But
my primary concern is that moving to a more intense zoning is a change that ties with the property no matter whose hands it is in. And so the property gets the neighborhood commercial zoning with 6,000 square foot max building, this particular owner may not have any intent of tearing down buildings and building 6,000 square foot office space on each of these properties, but a subsequent buyer could and would do that. And that would be more intrusive on the neighborhood. And I think, you know, I think there are opportunities within limited office to utilize the existing space. I'm not comfortable with an NC zoning.
I have the same concern, but most importantly, my concern is for neighbors behind it that might be impacted as well. And in terms of a limited office, I agree with my friends on this committee that it seems like a counselor would be fine, and as such, what with your interpretation, why would they have gone to Bozer? Could they have gone to Bozer?
Well,
No, because BOSA doesn't grant use variances, and this would be to have a use that's currently not permitted in the LO zoning. BOSA can only grant variances related to development standards, setbacks, height, things like that. They can't grant a use variance to allow a use that's not permitted in the zoning district. The only way to achieve that is through rezoning.
They could appeal the zoning administrator decision.
My thoughts are exactly. That's why I asked the question.
And could it be that if they do set up this office under limited office, and you know, all of a sudden we see traffic and we see that it looks like a medical office, we can then what do we do then?
That is an enforcement issue.
Okay.
Yeah. You're right, Mr. Chapman. They could appeal the decision, the interpretation that was made to the Board of Zoning Appeals. That would be one
avenue. I mean, do we have, what's the number on trips? I mean, is there a specific number that they makes this decision? I mean, maybe we need to be specific about, you know, about window.
There is. I don't have that information on me. There were specific trips. And we talked with the transportation engineers, and we talked about the fact that typically you would have somebody come to you and, who offers professional services like that, and they would say, well, I'm not a real doctor. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm just counseling. So it puts us in a difficult position of, you know, trying to say, well, what is a medical office and what isn't? And so for counseling services, and when we did a little bit of research on the website, the services that were offered, everything that they gave to their patients, we talked about it as far as trip generation, and we decided it really isn't that different than a medical office. And so that was kind of where that determination was made.
So is this something that perhaps we can look at in the zoning code rewrite as far as the definitions of limited office? I understand the need for a limitation on trip generation, that to be more aggressive zoning, but I'm still unclear on what could be a limited office. Like, is the threshold? Is it just the type of usage? Is it all about a medical office? You know, like the law firm could be there, right? That kind of thing.
Okay.
Assuming that Tommy would probably see clients, they charge about the hour, so a lot of times we make an appointment, they'll sit with you for an hour, and, you know. So I just think that when I send out trips, you know, counseling to me is not a medical office. It's just a social worker, right? Person with that type of degree. So, okay.
Well, we have a motion on the floor. We have a motion to deny and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Motion carries. Motion is denied. Moving on to item D, a request to rezone 0.5 acres from AB to AB2.
Yes, ma'am. So this is a property located off Braddock Road near Stuart Ingalls. Let's see, it is currently zoned AB. You can see here in the zoning map that other properties have come in around it as AB, and the future land use map does call for community scale commercial. So a little bit of history. In March 2012, this subject property was residentially zoned in the county. The owner at that time annexed into the town, and they requested AB2. That request was denied, and so they fell under the default zone of R1. Later in July, they came in and requested to rezone from R1 to AB. That was granted. However, they were able to maintain a residential use as it was approved in the county according to all the proper procedure. The neighboring property on Braddock Road is similarly named AB and R1 from R1 in 2018 as well. So this current request came to us because they went through our design review team process for a feasibility meeting. The new owner wanted to propose a pre-engineered metal building for warehousing on the site. In order to achieve that, you have to have an AB2 zoning. Staff doesn't have any site-specific development plans. But we did, through that feasibility meeting, advise them that they would have to have the ADU zoning first and foremost, and then after that, we would have to, if that were approved, we would have to address the engineering of the building.
And then planning commission recommended denial.
Planning commission recommended denial. They felt like 82 was too intense of a zoning district. The comp plan does allow for these different applicable zoning districts, obviously in context with what's going on in the surrounding area, adjacent uses. And again, this is the rezoning request, but some of the concerns that staff does have is with Braddock Road. In 2009, it did actually have access on Highway 17. But in 2012, when Highway 17 was widened, that area was abandoned. So Braddock Road has been kind of been designated as a 20-foot community right-of-way. And when that area was taken away, when Highway 17 was widened, you end up with, you can kind of see it off to the side of AutoZone. But essentially what you have is John Villegard Lane running down, and then Braddock Road is just this, still this 20-foot community right-of-way that has no direct access on Highway 17. So this is something that we certainly had concerns about in DRT and staff, particularly when you start putting all these commercial uses and they start to develop along this road.
Do you have a motion?
And so
I move to deny the request, and then I've got some questions.
Do you have a motion to deny? Do you have a second?
Second.
Do you have a motion? Second. Ms. Chapman.
I was out there yesterday evening about 4 o'clock, and there's a driveway that goes back to the I guess it's Tri-Tech. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you show me on this drawing where that is?
That should be John Dillard.
We go back up to the other street, is it just that?
In the entrance to that parking lot,
right, the bottom right.
There you go. Yeah. That's better. That's better.
So you can kind of see how it came down here, and then we have John Boulevard. And so that was one of DRT's recommendations. Is that as these properties start to develop, they need to look at shared access, perhaps combining those two accesses and improving them.
There was a green house out back there. I'm not seeing that on this drawing.
Is it not that roof, Michael? You seeing the roof?
Well, the roof's not going to be green.
No, that's what I'm saying.
That's part of my concern, that this is kind of an almost abandoned area right now, but it's fast getting in the middle of a lot of stuff. And with the amount of traffic I saw going back and forth, I was concerned this might be going to be a gas station. But I'm still concerned that we need some kind of plan that maybe shares this driveway, and this driveway is included in the design somehow. Just the area needs to be better planned. That's all I can say about it.
Any further discussion?
So do you guys feel like this would improve that area at all? Like,
no, I don't think so. I think a more intense zoning that has all these potential uses, I mean, the 6,000 square foot metal warehouse, it doesn't.
But how could they even get that in there with basically no access? Like,
on a dirt road.
That's what I'm saying. I don't
know what sort of traffic is that going to bring in with the warehousing of what type of stuff. And then also, once the zoning change again, it's permanent change, and if the property changes hands, it could become something very aggressive. But I'm not comfortable with rezoning to 82.
Move to that. Oh, sorry.
I think we already have a motion.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm ready.
I'm just gonna ask. So warehouse doesn't go along with our short-term rental like industrial use. To me, that's similar to my situation. Self-storage.
Yeah, warehousing is AB2, but it is a different
use than self-storage facility.
But it's like a commercial storage warehouse, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like it should be industrial and not ADU, but I okay.
Thank you. Motion, we have a second. Motion to deny. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. The request is denied. Item number E, request to rezone 4 acres comprising 3 parcels from R1 and R2 to R3 medium density. Planning Commission recommended denial.
Yes, ma'am. Planning Commission did recommend denial. Here are the lots. They are off of Russell Drive behind the church, and they have been historically used. They currently have 36 mobile homes on site. You can see the two-star properties along the Russell are R2, and then the larger parcel is zoned R1. The comprehensive plan does call for traditional residential neighborhood. This would allow 6 units an acre. So the maximum that could possibly be achieved under any zoning with the current future land use designation is 24 units. Currently there are 36 units here. The grouping of parcels, as mentioned, are R1 and R2. The maximum achieved, again, is 24 lots. Typically, we wouldn't get into design or anything, but they did go through DOT and they submitted a conceptual plan that showed that they would like to rezone to R3 and do 20 single-family detached lots. And that's what was proposed to DOT. The request before you is rezoning only. Staff has not been provided with a tree survey, but based on the conceptual plan that they submitted, we suspect that there would be a difficult time getting 20 lots with some really large historic trees that are on site. And this is the sketch that was provided to DRT. And staff went on site and just kind of took a look at some of the trees, and like I said, there are some really large ones. So, given the site constraints and those sorts of things, it's questionable whether maybe you can get 20 under R3 zoning. But that is the proposal before you. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. And Planning Commission, as you mentioned, did recommend denial of the request. They felt like this was an important infill development, that R3 was a little too aggressive, that it would be more appropriate as R1. And you can see the surrounding zoning there, which is predominantly R2, actually. And so they felt like it could develop under the current zoning of R1. So that was the recommendation.
And it's both R1 and R2 at this point.
Yes.
Do you have any questions from the committee?
Well, you failed to show a picture across the street, which I think is helpful. No, I meant like you showed the nice live oaks.
Oh, okay.
From the driveway in between those two stars.
Okay.
Directly across the street. You don't have that, I guess.
All I have.
Okay, I'll just say the directly across the street from that driveway is the entrance to Christ Our King School, which is K through 8th grade. So you can imagine what kind of traffic is on Russell Drive with that school, as well as access to a church, which is pretty heavily trafficked on the weekends. I was really concerned about the live oaks until I saw this picture, which shows that you might be able to do what's in the back under a little different zoning and maybe reduced number of houses. But under what's proposed, I would understand why the commission, even though it's less number than they could do, why the commission would have voted against it.
Okay. So by the acreage, they could do 24 at R1, but I assume the setbacks and things. You're saying they might fit the 20? Or they wouldn't be able to with R1?
They proposed 20 under the R3 zoning.
Mm-hmm.
We think that is a pretty
aggressive, given the trees, given everything, yeah. But under the R1, though, I don't think they could accomplish 20. But the maximum the comment allows is 24. And you're correct, Russell Street, there was comments about the traffic. Some folks said it was, there was a lot of misunderstanding about this development. We had a lot of folks thinking we were going to get a 120-unit condominium. So we really want to make it clear that we are going from 36 to probably 20, maximum 24. But there was concern about Russell Drive. There is no proposal to use BB Lane. That was brought up as well. But there was concern about the church.
I'm going to make a motion. Please move to deny.
The motion is denied. Second. The motion is denied. Second. Any further discussion?
Again, I think it's a great idea to get rid of trailers. And I think it's a great idea to put in something a little more current and put in water and sewer, probably hazard water, put in sewer. But I think we need a better plan before we can approve it. I like the idea of using that entryway and keeping the trees there and getting rid of the trailers. But right now, it's a little too overbearing for that space.
All right. Any further comments? All right, motion to deny. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Moving on to item F, request to annex 2.79-acre parcel. 1110
Chuck Dowell Boulevard. Okay, this is a request to annex in zone, as you said, R2. It's 2.79 acres.
If it was coming to the town, if it was not rezoned, what would it come in as automatically?
The comprehensive plan calls for, it would come in as R1, residential district.
And they want to rezone to R2.
And they want to rezone to R2, yes. Right. So as the speaker that spoke at the beginning of the public comment, there's some history here, which Peter did a great job of putting together. But the following parcel has undergone multiple kind of partial annexations. So you can see the parent parcel is in black. This portion here was brought in zone AB. The 50-foot right-of-way is zoned neighborhood commercial. And so all you have left is the hatch area, which is still in the county. And that's the portion that they want to annex in. There is a deed restriction that basically says that 50-foot access easement has to remain commercial, which we let the applicant know that, because the original submittal included the whole parcel, including the access, but the access is to remain commercial. But it is wide enough, it meets the 50-foot right-of-way requirement. And so they are asking to come in under the R2 zoning. The comp plan does call for residential neighborhood. It's appropriate to have both R1 and R2 in that. But if the R2 is not allowed and the annexation goes through, then it would default to R1 zoning. And you all have a conceptual site plan that was provided to you. Again, this is just the rezoning, but the Planning Commission recommended denial of the request.
Of the annexation as well as
the zoning? The zoning. They requested denial of the zoning. Obviously, this is an annexation and zoning. But they felt like it needed to come as R1, same as the last. They felt like it came in kind of right off the heels of the last submittal, the last agenda item. And they talked to it again about it being infill. It should be R1.
I'll move to approve the annexation.
Second. We have a motion approved in a second. Item F, the annexation. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number G, to rezone. Do we have a motion? I'm sorry, ma'am. Public comment is over.
I don't want to come into the town unless it can be R2. And I'm the owner of the property. We're in Charleston County. I don't want to come into Mount Pleasant unless it can be R2.
Ma'am, please sit down.
I'm fine. I just to come into the town unless it could be R2.
Okay. Item number G is the request to rezone to R2.
I just want to make sure they are.
Move to deny. We have a motion to deny. Do you have a second?
Second. I'll second for discussion.
We have second for the purposes of discussion. Mr. Chapman?
Under discussion, could you show me on the drawings where the Spine Institute was? And that's called NUSC?
Yeah, it's right over there, to the right of the entrance.
Say again?
To the right of the entrance,
right? Okay. I'm looking at it, yeah. Doesn't this entryway that's shown on the drawing go back to this residential property, access that NUSC property too?
Yes.
So it's a joint access, is that correct?
Yeah, it's, we were still kind of researching it, how that access works and how it functioned. But we do believe that, obviously we would have to look at that if the property to develop residentially, we would look at the access. But it appears that it could meet the town requirements for access. There are some legal documents though that maintain that area. It has to be commercial. It was kind of a due diligence with the applicant, and not with the applicant who is looking to purchase the property, that this is something that we need to look at more should the rezoning be approved and this property is developed, whether it's on one or R2.
That's what Jay needs some hard room, so to speak, wanting to make sure address wise that is shown remains commercial. I mean, we want commercial uses on Chucked Off. We don't want any more residential on Chucked Off. And that was my concern. So, in order to better understand this and how this ties in with that NUSC lot and all, because that's part of their parking lot. That's how you get into that parcel. I would amend the motion, the recommendation, to amend the motion for deferral until we get better information and more legal understanding of how that works.
We have a motion to amend?
I'm making a motion to amend.
Do we have a second on that? I don't understand what the concern is. So this driveway being commercial and then the property being residential, you don't understand the implication of that? I'm trying to understand how that private driveway,
which appears to be a private driveway.
It's not a private driveway, it's a public driveway, right? Is that correct? It's a 50-foot public driveway.
With access to that other parcel, what in fact the legal issue is on how you can use that together.
All right, we had a motion, but there was no second to the motion. So we have a motion to amend, and so we currently still have a motion on the floor to deny the rezoning, and we have a second. Ms. Reed, it is clear that the applicant can't withdraw. This is just a committee level decision. This is not a council level decision. So the applicant can withdraw the request and annex if they choose to do so.
Correct.
Okay.
Do we know what would be the use if it remains in the county or the zoning? Yeah.
I believe it's residential, so I'm not sure. Presumably they could do residential, but
it's neighborhood commercial. You could put it in storage buildings. We could do whatever. I don't
want
to do that.
It does set back behind Spine Institute, so it doesn't really have a commercial signage on Chuck Valley's. Mm-hmm. I was just going to address what Mr. Chapman was discussing as far as wanting commercial on Chuck Valley. The fact that it's set back and surrounded by residential, I think the residential use is fine. We're not really losing that. Necessarily losing from commercial.
And the distinction between R1 and R2 is lot size, so that we have to pack more houses on. No R1 designation permit.
Yeah, it's 8,000 square feet.
1,000 square foot versus 10,000. And the comp plan does call for conventional residential neighborhood. So R1 or R2 is appropriate.
All right, we have a motion to deny, and we have a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion to deny.
I don't.
Oh, sorry. And we have a
nay.
A nay. Yes, so 3-1, the recommendation to council to deny the rezoning. Moving on to item H, this is the amendment to the short-term rental ordinance.
Yes, ma'am. So this was brought up by a concerned SDR operator several months ago that the way it was written, the ordinance was written, that the grandfathering status, if you had already had a legally established SDR, we were not going to deny you a permit. And so after you got to the cap, if somebody who could prove that they were legally established would get a SDR permit. It was brought to this committee's attention, and we were asked to tighten up that language so that so we went back to the staff and kind of talked about ways we could tighten it up, and we proposed to the commission, and also at that time we wanted to tighten up some other language. When you administer a program and you administer ordinances, you see things that could be written better. We often make interpretations on things that aren't crystal clear, and so we wanted to use that opportunity to kind of tighten things up. And so we presented to the commission an option for giving preferential treatment, basically, to current SDR operators. And we threw out some dates, and we heard some concerns about different things. And we talked to the commission about perhaps having current SDR operators applying based on feedback. It sounds like probably November 15th to December 15th would be a good window. And then, those are your current SDR operators. You would filter those applications, you would make sure they met all the requirements, and then come January 1, if there are any left over, after you've already considered all your current operators, then those folks who do not have an SDR permit, if there are permits available, could apply, and at that point, it would be first come, first serve basis. So we drafted some language to try and address that concern, and we also drafted some language to help tighten up some other things that we saw that were not working right, and we felt like we could do better. We did hear the concerns. The commission really, they recommended the denial. They really wanted to defer it because they wanted more time for us to get public input and to work on the ordinance. But they couldn't defer it because of that 30-day window from a public hearing to their next meeting is outside of that 30 days. And so they went ahead and recommended denial with the hope that it would get remanded back to them so that we could work on it a little more and hear those concerns. And just to address a couple of things quickly, and then I would ask that if we're able to do that, I think that would be best, and we can continue to work and refine that language. But right now, we do have 437 permits. Less than 72 nights, 43 of those are rented less than 72 nights. And as you heard, the 72 night is what kicks it into 4% versus a 6%. We have 83 permit holders right now that have never rented. They don't rent at all.
How many?
We have 311 that rent more than 72 days. And so based on these numbers, and knowing that we have folks out there that want to operate a short-term rental permit, and the fact that we have 83 that are just sitting on it, we put in a time. So we said if you, first of all, you can't get your permit in late. So if you're a current SDR operator and we provide this new window of November 15th to December 15th, if you don't get it in, you're out of luck and you gotta go back to the front of the line. But we also wanted to put in a minimum day and say, if you're not renting at all, then you don't get to come in and be an SDR permit and be excluded from that cap.
why don't you give up your permit to somebody who is waiting to operate a short-term rental permit? We put it on 120 days. There was a reason behind that based on the data and the software that the numbers provided with us, but it was recommended that 72 would be a good number based on that 4%/6%. So those were some of the things that we discussed with the commission, or ways we can improve that. But again, they really wanted to have it deferred so that they could spend a little more time on it, and so that we could further hear some of the concerns and refine it and bring it back to you in a better draft form. So,
do you think? I'm trying to figure out if there's really a reason to have different dates to apply for people that hold a permit versus those who don't. I mean, can we just have the same window and then we'll know earlier?
Well, we talked about that, and Jane is our one person who goes through all of these, and so let's say January 1, everybody applies. It's going to take, let's say she gets 500 applications. She has to, by the time she gets through all of those and she figures out how many are current and she allocates those protected permits to them, it's probably going to be, January 31st, it's probably going to be March before these folks even know if there's a permit available. And so time-wise, it just didn't work out. It made more sense to have current operators apply earlier, on an earlier window. And that way, we have December 15th to January 1st to see, do we have any left? And if we don't, then we can let folks know there are no permits available on January 1.
Well, that's what I thought you were saying, the new applicants would apply after January 1?
Like, if there are permits available, we would put that information out there.
I just thought if we had everybody, like November 1st to December 15th apply, we'll know the existing people. And then before the end of the year, we could let people know how many are left over, and then they'll know by January 1 if they're going to get one for the year. If everybody applies at the same time, I don't mean move it up. I mean keep it back. But anybody that wants to apply, and I have another question about how we're going to monitor, the first come, first serve. How are we really going to keep up with that as far as who's eligible to get the open permits?
Well, if we process all of the current SDR operators, let's say we open it up November 15th, if you currently have an SDR, apply. When we get to December 15th, we're going to say, okay, we have 5 available. Well, we're probably going to look to our wait list.
Mm-hmm.
But if we didn't have a wait list, we would let people know, okay, we only have 5 available. We know there's 30 out there that want to apply, or 80, or whatever the number is. Please be advised if this is a first come, first serve based on those few that are available. That really isn't a concern to staff. For staff and having one person administer it, it was more about making sure, trying to find a better way to administer the cap, protect existing SDR operators that are following all the rules, being able to process all of their applications, and then if there's anything left over, then we deal with that separately.
So we're putting like a date time stamp, first come, first serve, on when somebody that doesn't have one applies, and we're keeping them kind of queued up.
That's how we've been doing it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
It comes in through our software, and it is very, very easy to follow in that regard.
Okay.
There's currently waiting some 80 more properties.
There's currently a wait list of about 80. Some of those are waiting because, like I said, we have 83 that have never rented. They're just sitting on it. And so that's why we thought, well, we're tightening this up. You should be required to use your permit. And if you're not going to use it, then perhaps, allow somebody else to use the permit. Otherwise, if they just hold on to it and they never have to rent, then there's never an opportunity for anybody else to get a chance. And we're just seeing a lot of this kind of this hoarding of the permit. And we feel like it would be appropriate to have some sort of minimum 72 days.
72 or less keeps it at 4%.
Is that our rule, or that's the county's rule?
That's
the state rule.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought the city of Charleston, that you lose your 4% if you do a short-term rental. I thought that was the rule. So that's it.
So,
no, I understand what you're trying to do with the differentiation of dates. And I think because we didn't have that, is why we got the 434 versus 400, which we should have had to start with. And that we as a committee need to help the staff to make sure that we don't get beyond that 400 again. And I understand that's what you're trying to do, and that's the reason you've written it this way. So I don't have any trouble with that part. I do want to make sure that these 83, we do whatever we have to do to make them use the permit or lose it, period. Whatever we have to do that, we should do. Because it's not fair to the rest of the people.
It's poorly enough.
I also see what you're trying to do with the two different deadlines, and that does make sense to me. I was even thinking that, so when you get done with the 400 and then whatever's, let's say you have 150 more, I was even looking at it like a lottery, like, because what if you get them all on the same date? But I guess you don't. They come in throughout, so you can keep track of that, which is cool. And then I was just listening to some of the residents and taking notes about their concerns. And I know they've emailed us as well. And they're asking for time for us to evaluate what we've done. It just seems like we've done so much and we're always doing something. And they just want us to just kind of like, hey, pick a number, pick a process, and let's watch that for a year or so. So the application process is pretty extensive.
I mean, Jane goes through each one, making sure they have all of their required documents, and it takes time, and that's why.
I mean, for the residents, for them to compile the application and get it turned in,
It sounds like a lot, but when you look at other municipalities, I think we're pretty flexible. We really try to work with the SDR community to make it as painless as possible. We have requirements. We're going to make sure that you're paying your taxes.
But you can get it done within a month, right? A month, you guys feel like it's fair.
Oh,
And then the minimal rent time, so that's a state-required law?
Well, no, we wanted to implement a minimum, because we have people out there that have never rented.
Yeah, but the 72?
The 72 is a state tax thing. So if you have an SDR and you rent out of your principal residence, less than 72 days, you can maintain that 4% tax.
And right now, ours is one. No?
No, we don't have a minimum of renting.
Oh, so that
we want to put one in place.
Yes, okay.
And we want it to make sense. We don't want it to be arbitrary. And so perhaps that 72, we originally had 120, minimum 120 days, and we heard concerns about that, and we hear that. And so we thought, you know, 72 would probably be appropriate, because that would match the state's taxation.
So my thoughts on that is I don't want to encourage more STRs. So I was thinking 24, like maybe somebody right at their home one weekend a month, that would be enough to keep them under that short term and let them keep their permit. So 72 to me seems kind of high. Those were really the only, those are my notes or my comments.
One more thing, the Planning Commission wanted us to look at, again, I know I said this, but they wanted more time. They wanted us to look at increasing our application fee. We heard a resounding 250 is not enough. And we also heard a resounding our penalty fees are not enough. The 500 is kind of slap on the wrist, and we need to be able to. They even recommended 1,000. So those are some of the discussion points that came out of the commission that they wanted to see and kind of help make a few more changes. I understand this.
feels like we're here a lot discussing this. Staff does not want to be here discussing this all the time. But when we're asked to look at something and open it up, that's an opportunity to clean it up, to make it better for us to administer, make it cleaner. And if we have that opportunity, then let's do it, get it done, get it adopted, and then let's operate it, let it go, and see how we do.
I'm not comfortable just getting with the raising fees for STR application thing. I know I'm just one of four, but I just want to give you guys kind of heads up. I'm not.
Okay. We talked about how it might not be, we wouldn't be able to enforce, like, limiting how many permits a person holds. I don't know. Did we ever put a number in place, like, two?
No. No, that was one of our recommendations. Yeah. We had several recommendations early on. Limit how many somebody can have. Don't allow an ADUs. There's all kinds of ways to limit this. Obviously, the cap was chosen, and that's what, you know. But no, there is no limit on how many SDRs one person can have.
Yeah, I feel we should limit. Yeah. We should probably really enforce that, because one person could get 20. Under different names, I don't know, but whether they live in the town, I mean, it's important to me too.
I don't think that we can, I think, one, we cannot dictate whether or not someone gets a permit based on whether or not they live in the town. That's not permissible.
I would municipalities do that, I think. Or how many they allow to have. Like, they can have one, but they can't.
Mr. Craig, can we clarify that? My understanding is that we can't say, if you don't live in Mount Pleasant, you can't have.
That's correct. I don't think that would be appropriate.
I'm sure. I'll see Atlanta or some, there's some other cities that and maybe allow more than one if you live in town.
And I don't think that there should be, I think that we need to give clarity to the SDR owners as soon as possible. And I think that there's a lot of concern about people operating their businesses. We have been in this process for years, and there was significant notice provided from the beginning of the process to where anyone who wanted to participate in the short-term rental process had an opportunity to come in, get their, you know, apply for the permit. There was we set the cap. We were very concerned about how it got to 437 based on the language being unclear, which is why we need to tighten that up. I think also the reason that we have the cap, and the reason we set the cap at 400 was to accommodate all the existing short-term rentals that were in the town. But the reason for the cap was to preserve the character of neighborhoods. So many neighborhoods in Mount Pleasant, especially the newer neighborhoods, have HOAs in place that do not allow short-term rentals, which means that the short-term rentals are all concentrated in the older neighborhoods that don't have restrictions on such things, which means that there are certain streets in this town where half of the block is short-term rentals, and it really changes the character of the neighborhood with having such a transient population in there. So I think, for me, we have to balance, in a way, our goal with the cap to preserve characters of neighborhoods, but then also with STRs, you want to generate revenue for the town. And so if there are people who are not using their permit at all, then we are not generating the revenue for the town that would be part of the goal of establishing an STR. I think 72 days is high. I agree with Ms. Corley on that. I think that there are people who, you know, if they rent it out every weekend, you know, how many nights is that, or every other weekend or once a month, or when they're on spring break. And I think that fits within, I think having a lower number of minimum nights fits within the goal of actually, like, preserving the character of the neighborhood. So if all 400 of these rented 30 nights or less a year, I would be fine with that. But that's not how it is, and there's 83 that are not using it. So I think that putting in a minimum number of night rentals, but I think it should be a reasonable number. What concerns me is, the economics of the situation, the times that we live in where, we went on lockdown. I don't think it'll ever happen again, but suppose it does, and then people's businesses are getting shut down. You know, trying to make something that's fair, and then also with the 437, we're basically at the number 437 until people do not apply within that window, right? So we are currently in a reduction phase right now where the if someone does not apply within that window, they will not get a permit, and we'll slowly make it, but no new permits are going to be opened to the public until we drop below that 400 number again. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I, you know, we've got time here. Our next application process isn't until January 1. Would this committee be comfortable if we brought back next month we revise the dates for the current versus the new, and then we lower that minimum yearly from 120 to 72 to whatever this 30, 50, whatever this committee decides. Can we bring that back?
I think 20.
20
a year? 20 a year. Does that sound fair?
I think you
go. 24. 24.
Yeah.
Probably 24.
24. 15. We can make those changes and we can bring it back to next month.
Mr. Chapman?
Madam Chairman, I think he's got a request from the Planning Commission to see whatever we're going to come up with another time. And I think we need to honor that request. I think they wanted to help us. They just had too much all at once on their plate. And I'd like to hear from them before next month. If we do that, will we have time to hear from them next month?
So let's say we took it back to them for further discussion based on what we talked about
right
today. That's the June. So it can come back to you if you're July committee meeting.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see that,
okay,
as well as the other things you mentioned.
And then there was a public comment, and I wanted to have some clarity on that. So in an STR, if you have a two-bedroom STR, you get two guests per room? No.
No, that's an accessory dwelling unit ordinance. So remove the whole STR thing. Our current accessory dwelling unit ordinance says your maximum occupancy is three persons. We've had several folks come to us in relation to ADUs, but also in the STR world, that this doesn't make any sense, because if I have even if somebody, you know, their family comes and visits, they're not supposed to have their children and two, say, you know, daughter, husband, two children. Legally, according to our ordinances, they're not supposed to stay in an accessory dwelling unit. And if your accessory dwelling unit has two bedrooms, it doesn't make a lot of sense, and we had that as a discussion. I think it was last month, the month before here, and it didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what that's about, is raising the maximum occupancy for an accessory dwelling unit.
Based on the number of bedrooms.
Yeah, so if you had a two-bedroom, you, instead of having three persons, you could have four persons.
And a one-bedroom, you could have three.
Correct.
Is that it?
Did they say earlier that the short-term rental ordinance says two per bedroom plus two?
There is something, and I'm not familiar with an STR operator, but there is a cutoff having to do with occupancy, with how you can advertise. I'm not familiar with that. And I think that's what you heard earlier. It hurts an STR operator if they're renting an ADU, that they can only advertise it for a maximum of three people. We are looking at it from an ADU standpoint, because it's an ADU ordinance. But I think that's what you're hearing.
So the ADU's overlay, it supersedes the STR occupancy limits.
Yeah, and because that ADU ordinance was in place, we made sure that the STR ordinance was consistent with it. We didn't want to conflict with that. So the request is, can we change the maximum occupancy for an ADU? And in turn, that would help us if we had a short-term rental and with how we were operating with that structure.
Just to speak to that, I'm not in favor of making any changes to the ADU ordinance.
Right.
ADUs were strictly to be an opportunity for potentially mother-in-law or a child who might come back from college and didn't have a place to stay. It was not to create more dwelling units in a neighborhood that would be like another house. That was not the idea about an ADU. So I would not be in favor with any changes to the ADU ordinance.
I was just going to say, I agree with Mr. Chapman. If you start to turn a single-family property into a multi-family, you start allowing an entire family to stay in ADU. The point is for maybe a couple, and, you know, they didn't want to, I guess, be strict saying just two, in case there's one child, but when you start having a family, they really don't belong over a garage, you know, and turning a property almost into a multi, you know. Not a single family zoning anymore, so I agree with Mr. Chapman that we should honor our ADU ordinance.
Ms. Corey, do you have any thoughts? All right, so do we have a motion from this committee to send this back to Planning Commission for further discussion? We have such a motion. We have a second. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion to send it back to the Planning Commission passes. Item number 7 on the agenda is update on Settlement Community Task Force.
Liz is going to cover this for you. Good afternoon. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk about this a little bit more. So last time we got together, or here before you, was the end of February, which was the March committee meeting, I believe. And we ran through the various recommendations and from the report the Settlement Community Task Force put together. And there were a number of items that kind of floated to the top in our discussions and in your recommendations, like, oh, this is something we really need to talk about again. So that's what we've got for you today, is to kind of take those and, you know, kind of revisit that and see where we want to go with them. Those items kind of fell into four categories, if you will. There were infrastructure recommendations, recommendations dealing with economics, cultural integrity, and property ownership. And this is just kind of a lot of words, but we had drainage concerns, which it just to give you a bit of an update, town staff, county staff, DOT staff, and probably somebody else that I'm not thinking about right now, have been coordinating and have been working in the Phillips community, going out there on site, met, walked, you know, problem areas to see what needs to be done. They're trying to coordinate a similar walkthrough for the Tinoff community. So there are, you know, literally, you know, conversations going on the ground to try to work through some of those issues in particular. Sewer topic obviously has been on your plate of late as to how that is dealt with some of these properties in unincorporated areas. Transportation, again, we are looking at, as we were talking earlier, our upcoming deeper dives and community conversations, that's what we're talking about. We're going to be hosting in the fall, one of the topics we want to talk about townwide with communities, but specifically also, of course, with the settlement communities, there were transportation concerns as well. Is there anything, let me see.
On the focusing on the Mount Pleasant Way, so the Mount Pleasant Way has been a project on the books of the town for a long time, and it's been something that the community has generally been very excited about, but it appears that there are certain communities that don't want it running through their neighborhoods, or they don't want
The Mount Pleasant Way specifically, we've had transportation planning and bicycle and pedestrian plans for a long time. The Mount Pleasant Way specifically is a product of this past comprehensive planning effort. Since then, the transportation department has done a specific Mount Pleasant Way master plan, kind of at the beginning of the COVID timeframe, a couple years ago. And we have been moving forward with, you know, taking bites of the elephant because it's a big project. And so as we are proceeding, we're just trying to figure out segments that make sense that are you know, from a
service for, you know, perspective, where, you know, where is it going to do us some good? Where can we perhaps connect a segment that's already in place with another segment that's already in place, that sort of thing. There have been situations where a neighborhood didn't necessarily want it in their neighborhood, and so we're not going to pursue that at this point in time. We'll look into another area where it is wanted, and we'll, you know, see how it all comes together over time. So that's how that's moving forward. Anything else you want to talk about here specifically?
Yes, ma'am. I think we've made some inroads on the sewer section with an ordinance. Did we get a first reading at our last monthly meeting?
Correct.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
And I don't see that recognized.
Well, I'm sorry. This is just related to the discussion we had last time.
But we have made some inroads.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Economic disparity. So questions about housing costs and investment opportunities. Are there opportunities for the town to use its leverage and its ordinances, perhaps, to influence investments, future investments in these types of developments?
This second item, the required percentage of new developments, is what we're having. It's my understanding that it's not allowed by state law. You cannot require new developments to incorporate affordable housing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I believe it could be done, and I might be wrong, if it were something that they, I'm not going to contradict this directly. But there could be ways of encouraging just a workforce housing development, per se. Not requiring it, but encouraging it.
Which we do,
correct,
in the sense that our moratorium on multifamily does not include workforce housing.
Exactly.
So if anyone wants to bring a workforce housing development to the town, that would be permitted under our current ordinances. And then we already have one project like that, Gregory Ferry, and with the Faith on Property Road, we are inviting proposals that potentially include workforce housing.
But that's, again, that's an encouragement, not a requirement. We have the new, relatively new economic development strategy that the town has developed that could potentially tie in with uses in some of these areas. It could provide possible employment opportunities and that sort of investment within the communities to support the maintenance of that community. We also talked about last time the idea of using some of the town programs that we have with shop local programs and so forth, and trying to coordinate those better with businesses that are within settlement communities to support those. I know there's a little bit of a question there. I guess if they're in an unincorporated area, you know, it's a town program, we'd have to have some way of figuring out how to do that, but it could be done if we wanted to. Is there anything there that had a particular interest, I suppose?
I think it would be good to include them in our shop local, if they wanted to participate.
Yeah, I feel like with the location of some communities being within the footprint of Mount Pleasant, despite not being in the town as far as it legally, I think in the spirit of things, they are part of the town of Mount Pleasant, and we have a significant interest in the preservation and support of these communities. So I don't know what's preventing us from working with the Mount Pleasant Chamber of Commerce to say, you know, highlight certain businesses or, you know, allow them to participate in that Pleasant Chamber of Commerce or that kind of thing. Encourage that.
Sounds good. So cultural integrity. So there have been
a number of conversations with Rick. I had a meeting Friday, town staff, county staff, and the Tinhall community, representatives of Tinhall, talking about modifications, potential modifications to the Sweetgrass Lasset Overlay District, which presently doesn't cover 10 mile. That was one of the things that came up in the settlement community task force. We've got this overlay district that covers some of the settlement communities, but it doesn't touch Snowden, for instance, or Phillips, or Hamlin, or 10 mile. And the concerns about development pressures, of course, exist across the board within those communities. So why would we, you know, would it be something for us to consider to expand, whether you still call it Sweetgrass Basket Overlay or Historic Community Overlay or something like that, to cover specifically the settlement communities, whoever wants to join in. If they don't want to participate, okay. But if you do, then we could perhaps modify our ordinances and county ordinances, because they're also going through the process right now, looking at their zoning code.
It is my understanding that there's a historic preservation ordinance at the county level, mm-hmm. where communities can apply to that. And I think it would be a very positive thing for the town to have parallel ordinance from mm-hmm. the town, so that existing communities can apply for that, or so that communities choose to annex and can annex and not that historic preservation. I think that's certainly something that could be incorporated into this. We'd have to look at, they have a board that reviews anything that goes on within those areas. So with that, this should be a detail we have to figure out, whether we had a special historic district commission for the settlement communities, or are they part of our other historic district commission? Or how could that work?
We did update the name of, it's no longer the Old Village Historic District.
Right.
It's the Historic District. That so should cover them as well.
Something to consider, along with membership and that sort of thing.
I was going to say, we discussed this before, that a lot of people don't want to come annex into the town because they fear development or certain things, or the area's not being protected. So I wondered if there was some historic designation that could maybe encourage them to annex their part of that, and the property is protected and so on. But I don't know how much further we can go look into advancing that. And it could be matching the county.
Yeah, I think so. Heirs property, there are issues with heirs property annexing that occur, because there's no clear title to the ownership for it. So who'll be the applicant to annexing?
Okay.
That's a good question. So that's certainly something we can continue to work on with the county and the communities, if that's your direction. Does it make sense, I would imagine, does it make sense if a community wants to participate, we would want them to participate, but if they're not interested in participating, we're certainly not going to try to force anything.
Exactly. Right. I think that's something that we can put on the agenda for next month, is discussing historic preservation ordinance that parallels the county. Can we put that on the agenda for next month, please? Thank you.
And one other just small item that we've talked about was the idea of hosting an open house for. When we went through the settlement community task force, we brought in a number of speakers, a number of, some Center for Heirs Property, for instance, folks in the tax commission to explain, or county assessor office, excuse me, to explain how you get a, homestead exemption, for instance, that sort of thing. There was a point made or a recommendation made that maybe we consider having something that will, open to the public. The similar sorts of information, but that could be something we do at any particular point.
And my thought on that would be that we would need to go into the communities to do something like that. I think that hosting something at town hall, people transportation trying to get out here, people who and the timing of it, people who work and everything. So I think. I think that if we were to host an open house, there would need to be a lot of coordination with the leaders of the communities to make sure that it's accessible to as many people in the community as possible.
Absolutely, because you obviously want good participation. And the last item that we pointed out last time was the questions about what can we do to address some of the concerns about heirs' property and taxation. We've heard any number of times over various meetings about concerns that if you approve this development, this will cause, you know, harm to the tax rates of those in the community because of just the way the comparables and that sort of thing. But we are, as you've heard, you know, we're working under state law, so it's not that we don't have direct control over those tax issues. Is there anything that we would want to consider sharing with the state government to look into something like that?
You know, I think a resolution about just about heirs' property in particular, because I feel like it's such a sticky issue and it's an expensive issue to resolve. And I don't know if there's a, there's no silver bullet to it, I don't think, because this has been around, this has been an issue for a very long time. But if there, I mean, a resolution to the state delegation, to the state house to create a fund to help people resolve their title issues, and we have significant ARPA money coming into the state, and you know, I don't know what opportunity there is there, but and I know that there are some state legislators that have an interest in heirs' property, and I hope at least one that received a copy of our report, and maybe just a smooth communication with that person would be a positive thing.
And just, this is a little bit of an update on where we are. As you mentioned, Mr. Chapman, you know, things that are ongoing, we've had the first reading. We've had a meeting with Tenmont Community on Friday. The stormwater folks have been meeting between the different jurisdictions and communities. So there are efforts continuing to meet the goals and to address the recommendations of this plan. These are just some other suggestions and thoughts that have come out from your last conversation that might be something in addition that we, you know, wanted to take on. So we've got some direction on the historic preservation ordinance to bring back to for next time. So thank you for that. And then if there are any other questions or
can we get anything else or
that we need to.
If there's nothing to come before this committee additional, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.